You're welcome to take a seat for the sermon. Just need to give you a bit of a trigger warning at the start. I may not be serious for the next 5 or 6 minutes. Please don't take the first lot of advice I give you. Don't take it home and do it. And it's okay to laugh at me now. Are you ready? Here we go. I've discovered an incredible new way to feel really good about yourself. This is the most dynamic, extraordinary, life-changing thing that you can do. And it is to look at other people and quietly, under your breath, say, "I'm better than you." Oh no, it really works. You can feel so good and so much more excellent inside by just silently looking at people. Look around the room. Look at the mess they are. You can look at someone nearby you and just in your head say, "I'm better than you." And there's lots of ways to do it. Let me give you 21 ways to say, "I'm better than you." The first one is to say, "I'm smarter than you." If I disagree with you, it's probably because you're stupid. If we have a disagreement, it's probably because you're way dumber than me and you don't know as much as I do. And if you appear to be beating me, well, I'm just going to get out my phone, pretend I'm answering a text, but you know what I'm really doing now? I'm Googling stuff. And then I'm going to look really smart. And then I'm just going to look at you and smile, even though it's like my actual knowledge is augmented by virtual reality Google smartphone stuff. And I'm just going to think to myself, "I'm smarter than you." So if you value IQ and you want to feel good, just give this a shot. But I know a lot of you can't because you're not as smart as me. But there's hope for you. It's okay because all you need to do is think about your physical attributes and say something to people in your head like, "I'm stronger than you." This one really works well. Like, you know, Stephen Hawking with all your fancy nuclear physicists, "I can beat you at basketball." It actually works. Waleed Ali with your fancy talks on telly. "You know what, Waleed? I'm bigger than you. Yeah, I've got more friends than you, Waleed." Albert Einstein, "You think you're so good at physics, but that's all relative." Because Albert Einstein, "I am better looking than you and my hair is under control." So if you want to take this approach, you don't have to be smart at all. Just like get a fake tan, dye your hair, work out, you know, take bulking stuff, and just try and look good, get fit, and then you can look at people and compare and realize that your body's better than them and give them a version of, "I'm stronger than you." Just try it now. Look at someone really ugly nearby and just don't. Right. Now, I can see you all, and some of you aren't as smart as me, and you're certainly not as good looking. I mean, look, hey. So, but you know, it's okay. My wife laughed. What you can do, though, is you can comfort yourself, because I'm just a pastor, and so you can say to me, "I'm richer than you." This one really works. Like, what you need to do is just get more toys, more stuff, more money, get 3 jobs, invest in cryptocurrency or a Ponzi scheme, and just get like 5 credit cards, buy a heap of stuff, look good, and then just drive past me in my older car and just smile and think to yourself, "I'm richer than you." The best way to do this is by a Holden. It's great. And doesn't it feel good for one moment to just like look down, or if you're in Doug's little Peugeot, look up from your European car and just think, "I'm richer than you." There's lots of ways to do this. My favourite is "I'm funnier than you," because, you know, if you're not good looking, okay, now you can comment, wife. If you're not good looking and you're not rich and you're not smart, you can just drink lots of espresso without milk. You can drink spirits and you can just act really cool and just you can just chuck off at the whole world. It's just one of the best strategies. The Old Testament talks about it in the book of Proverbs. You can just look at those clever, strong, rich, sexy pricks and think, "But they've got no sense of humour. I mean, Trump, would you just get a sense of humour? I'm funnier than you." And it really works. That's why some of the best Australian comedians are so ugly. But they're funnier than you, and that's what they value. So they feel good, right? What about if you're not funny, and you're not sexy, and you're not smart, and you're not, you know? Well, you can still do this one. You can say, "I'm classier than you." This is a really tricky one. Because you can define class however you like, and you can say, you know, like, you might have an education or a degree, you might work as a radiographer, ooh, but you've got just rubbish taste in music, you've got rubbish taste in cars. And, you know, the way I live, I'm just more classy, yeah? And I just know the best things. This one really works, because you can define it how you like it. But, you know, perhaps you're not classy, you're not funny, you're not sexy, you're not rich, you're not intelligent. There's hope for you all. There is a solution. It's called religion. No, no. Religion is fantastic. It's one of the best ways to feel better than other people ever invented. Think about it. It's great because all you've got to do is think that you're better than other people and, you know, study some Buddha, some Confucius, chuck in a little bit of Jesus, blend it all together, yeah, and then define your own religion so that no one else can compete. It's great. And ignore everything Jesus ever said about you being a sinner and you having some problems in your heart. Just ignore that stuff and do good things and care for people and listen a lot and really grow, you know, read some really good self-help books. And if all that fails, you could even try Christianity. And after growing spiritually for some time, like me, look at it, it's great, isn't it? You can look at people, and when you see them do stupid crap things, you can just go in your head, I'm holier than you. And you might even be right. And it might even work. Now, if none of that works, I have a surefire 21st century solution for feeling better than others: social media. Just get online and lie. Lie it up. Just get on there and post really cool pics, like the pic of you eating that amazing set of pancakes for breakfast that looks like you just threw it together and sat there, but it actually took 4 hours to stage. And then you can say to people, I'm sexier than you, I'm thinner than you, I'm wiser than you, I'm happier than you, I'm angrier than you, and I have a right to be angry because my anger is more righteous and more appropriate than yours. I can express it online. Outrage makes me feel better. Yeah. I'm kinder than you, I'll show you all my stuff. I'm louder than you, I'm busier than you, and my busyness is because I'm important and you're not. Yeah? But at the same time as I'm busy, I'm calmer. Oh, look at my calmness expressed in that beautiful Instagram shot. I'm quicker than you, I'm deeper than you, I'm cooler than you, I'm hotter at the same time. I'm cooler and I'm hotter all at once. I'm cleaner than you. How could you possibly post that stupid rubbish on Facebook? And finally, this is the Lutheran approach. I'm nicer than you. Right. What do you reckon? It works. I mean, look at her. I just really want to puke looking at her. Because this is one of the best ways is, you know, I'm so spiritually developed that I don't compare with anyone ever. And I can see how much better than all of them I am because I'm not comparing with them. You know you want to do this. This could work really well at Emmanuel. I mean, look at it. You may not be better than everyone at everything, but you're always better than someone at something, and this room's just absolutely ripe. Turn and look at someone nearby you and try. Try to say it. Are you going to do it? Oh, I'm nicer. You're nicer than the guy up front, that's for sure. Okay. Now, I hope you're clear that I'm not suggesting you do this. Are you clear? Are we clear? Good. But it can make you feel better. Oh, it can. It works. It does actually work. At least for a short time, right? I think it's a bit like drinking, actually. Some people, and let's be honest, some of us in the room do this, and I'm not condemning you or saying I'm better than you, okay? People drink to dull stuff, yeah? And it does work. It works to drink, doesn't it? Until the next day. And I think it works to say I'm better than you. It actually works. But not the next day, not long term. Because you have to keep finding someone that you're better than. Is that fair to say? So I have a question for you. I'm going to give you 60 seconds to tell someone, and then I might interview the room. What's spiritually and emotionally unhealthy about thinking I'm better than you. And just to be clear, it's not actually wrong to know that you're better at something than someone. Like, for instance, I know that I'm better at playing piano than my wife. That's okay to... Comparison is not what I'm worried about. Comparison is a natural part of life. It's a natural thing that human beings do. But what I'm concerned about is when comparison becomes your middle name, when comparison becomes the way that you think all the time, and especially when comparison becomes how you define your self-worth. Does that make sense? I'm not saying never compare ever, because there are times to do that when you're heading up a department and you're employing and you're looking, you're going to do some comparisons, right? But I'm talking about when you, in your heart, use comparing to define your worth. What's so spiritually and emotionally unhealthy about that, about thinking I'm better than you? Off you go. 60 seconds, and then I might ask around the room a little bit. Now, just so this doesn't become a competitive thing, if somebody said something good to you, could you help me and tell me something good you heard someone say? So it's not, look, this is what I said. I'm a theological genius. I'm a spiritual guru. Is anyone just call me and tell me? Anyone from the, let's go group-wise. What can anyone tell me something someone said that's good? It stunts your growth. It does. Very much so. Why be limited, by the way? Why be limited by comparisons with other people and what they achieve? Why would you do that? Someone from over here? Makes me the center of the universe. Well, aren't you? Yeah, it's good. It actually focuses me back on me, this whole thing. It's really funny, isn't it? Right here. Wait a minute. Go.
In Shine, we say... if you compare, you despair. And if you admire, you are inspired.
Wow. Let's clap for that. One from over here. Anyone? Please. Doesn't last. Makes you lonely. The higher you climb, the harder you fall. Yeah, the higher you climb, the harder you fall. Australians love that. We love seeing the high and mighty fall. Well, I believe this is spiritually and emotionally unhealthy. I don't think it's a worthwhile way of measuring your worth. Now let's get into the Bible story. We're in Mark 9, and you'll notice that in the middle of Mark's Gospel, chapters roughly 8, 9, and 10, last week we noticed the phrase, on the way. Can anyone remember what on the way actually means? It's on the road to the cross. That's Mark's code for telling you that what is occurring here is Jesus journeying to die. And Jesus is journeying to die, and he starts to tell, this is like a hinge in the story. Up to this point, it's been unclear exactly who he is and what his mission is, and now he starts to tell people. And in chapter 8, for the very first time, he says, I'm going to Jerusalem, I'm going to be captured, tortured, and die. And then I will rise. And the first time he says it, remember it was on the blackboard last week, someone gets upset at him, Peter. Now we're in the second time he says it, and he'll say it a third time in the next chapter, next week. The second time he says it, every time he just tells people who he is and what his mission is, every time Jesus actually says, I actually came to be down here with the criminals and die, every time he says that, it gets opposed. And take note, because that is what will happen in your life. Second time he says, the Son of Man is going to be captured, killed, tortured, and die, and 3 days later rise. And then what happens immediately after that is that they argued, notice, on the way. They argued with one another about who was the greatest. And this has been driving me nuts this week. First of all, it drives me nuts that after Jesus says, I'm going to Jerusalem to die, and you're all coming with me, they argue who's greater. That doesn't make much sense, but neither did it when Peter told him off. But the thing that really has been bugging me is how were they arguing I'm better? On what basis? What criteria were they using? You know, what were they using to measure their greatness? Like, I want to be a fly on the wall for this argument with the disciples, and I want to hear them arguing, I'm better, no, I'm better, no, I'm greater, no, I'm greater. And I want to know what on earth criteria they could possibly use on the journey to the death of Jesus to say they were better. Don't you? And so I studied this really carefully. The word that is used there is mega, by the way. Literally, in the ancient language, the word is mega. They argued over, I'm more mega. You can make a form of the word mega to mean most mega. And they argued, I'm most mega. But what? What were they saying? I've got a better halo. I did better miracles. I've got better knowledge. I've got better leadership. I can carry a cross. I've got greater wisdom. I've got a better relationship with Jesus. How better? Why greater? What were they arguing about? Give yourself 30 seconds to think about that or to tell someone. What criteria did they possibly use to argue that they were superlative, that is, greater or greatest? Over to you. You can talk now or you can just think for a moment. I want to know, so I did what pastors do, some extensive study of the scriptures, and it just doesn't say. We'll never know. Maybe one day you can ask one of them. And I think there's a reason that the Bible doesn't tell us what criteria they used to argue who was better. Why doesn't the Bible tell us? Because it's not important. In fact, it doesn't matter what criteria you use. Physical, emotional, spiritual, whatever. It doesn't matter what criteria you use. When you think you're greater or more deserving than other people, you harbour a little piece of hell in your heart. I think that the writer deliberately doesn't tell us what criteria they used because the writer doesn't care. The problem is comparing and using that comparison to feed my self-worth. And when I do that, it's a little piece of hell. Because you know how hell works? There's this beautiful saying by Dostoevsky. He says, would you rather be Lord of all in hell or slave of all in heaven? Have you heard that one? And when Dostoevsky says this, what he's trying to explain to us is how hell works. Hell is a place of hierarchy and domination and mastery over people. Hell is a place of comparing and ladders. And, you know, when you invite this kind of thinking into your life, when superiority creeps in, it is bad for your emotions and bad for your spirit. Why is it bad emotionally? Because it doesn't last. And because if you're better, there's always someone that's better than you're better. But really, it's bad emotionally because to think that I am better than someone else distances me from them. It makes it hard for me to hear them. And this kind of thinking only leads to despair and hatred and judgment. And on the other hand, it can lead to a sense of superiority, which is what the Pharisees in this story had. They were religious and they thought they were better, and that is why they were not, says Jesus, entering the kingdom of heaven. So I think this kind of thinking, it's emotionally bad for you. It's crippling, you know, when someone really hurt you. Has this happened to you? Someone's really hurt me. And I've been the better person. Have you done that? Been offended by someone else and you've walked away and you've been the better person. And then you think, at least I'm better than them. I'm closer to God than them. And, you know, you might be. You might be. I'm not arguing whether you are or not. But the minute that you use that to bolster yourself, you're in trouble. This is one of my problems is, yeah, sometimes I'm a nice Lutheran. I'm nicer. I'm nicer than the idiot who took my park. But I know it. I'm better than them. And the problem with this kind of thinking is, hear me clearly, when you get caught in even a tiny little bit of superiority over other people, it makes you unaware of people and unaware of God's Holy Spirit. Any sense of superiority in our lives shuts us off to the work of God, the Holy Spirit. You know, so when someone's offended me and I'm better than them, and maybe I did better. But when I let this sense of superiority, that my worth is greater than theirs, that I am more deserving than them, when that creeps in, you know what happens? I can't forgive them. I can't let go. Some of us can't let go because we have to be better, we have to be right, and we have to know it in our heart, even if we don't say it to others. So I want to ask you today to regularly check your heart for any trace of superiority. This is something that we can do in our prayer life when we're sitting quietly with God. We can actually do an audit. We can, with extreme prejudice, audit ourselves and say, Lord God, I'm having trouble with this person. Is there any trace of superiority that I'm better? And if there is, what do? Hunt it down in your heart. Hunt it down and kill it. And there's only one way to kill it. You can't kill it yourself. You have to take it to God and say, God, I'm just like them. They may be the offender, but I'm superior. You have to confess this to God, get it out in the open, and hear that you're forgiven. Otherwise, you're just going to harbor a little piece of hell in your heart. So the disciples are arguing, who's the greatest? And Jesus does something really beautiful. He takes a little child. And what does he do? First thing he does is he hugs it. Notice that. He takes a little child in his arms. Now, I didn't talk about this with the children because this is really horrifying. But where did children fit in the social hierarchy in that time? Where are they on the ladder? They're about here. I'm really grateful that in our culture we do value children much more than in that one. Because we're better. That's a joke. We're just different. But in that culture, children were disposable very often. Remember that? Children were bought and sold. Children in a culture of scarcity were regarded as taking up resources and giving back nothing. They were. In a brutal, hierarchical culture, children at that time were a symbol not of innocence. That is not what children symbolize to them. That's what they symbolize to us, right? Children were a symbol of helplessness. They were a symbol of statusless people. And so these people are arguing about who is greatest. And you know who Jesus favors? He doesn't go to one of them and say, hey, Peter, you're the best. James and John, you went up the mountain with me. Maybe that's what started the argument, by the way. He just went up the mountain with a few of them. He takes a child in his arms. All your being better didn't get you in the arms of Jesus. It was a gift. And he takes that child, and he doesn't say, be like the child, actually, this time. That's another one. In this one, he says, welcome the child. I'm down there. I'm not up there. I'm down there. You want to welcome me? Welcome the child, because I'm down there, says Jesus. Being better than others never gets you a millimeter closer to God. If that's your idea of religion, you're stuffed. Being better than others is, in a sense, a beautiful part of growing spiritually, that you become more and more like Christ, you become deeper and richer spiritually. Sure, but knowing it and thinking it and comparing and being superior, that will never get you a millimeter closer to God. And in fact, being a better person never gets you closer to God, because God loves you first, right? The problem with thinking about yourself as better than others, the problem with thinking that you're more worthy than others, is that that ruins your spirit, because it makes you unable to receive grace. You know what grace is? God's love for free, which you don't deserve, which you didn't earn. Because it's always grace. You are always saved by God's free gift of grace every minute of your life forever. Get that in your head. Forever you will be saved by grace. Not just once upon a time, and now you're earning it. Jesus says, if anyone would be first, they must be last of all and servant of all. And at this point, I imagine some of us getting excited and going, ha, I've got the trick to get ahead. The trick to get ahead is to be behind. The trick to be first is to go last. The trick to be master is to become a servant. Is that what Jesus is giving us here? No. Actually, I think what Jesus is doing more than anything here, apart from giving us advice on how to grow spiritually, put yourself under people, not above them, behind them, not before them, last, not first. Jesus is actually talking about himself, isn't he? Jesus is the one who was first and became last. He is the master who became servant. But this is actually what I think Jesus does in this chapter of Mark. I think he says, chuck out all your ladders. You know, we all build ladders, social hierarchies, worth hierarchies, all sorts of different criteria. I think Jesus says, chuck out your ladders. If your religion is a ladder, get rid of it. It's not getting you anywhere. He says, chuck out all your ladders and instead look at the cross. You know, the cross is the place to go to be the most emotionally healthy and the most spiritually healthy you can ever be. You know why? The cross, it's good in two ways. The first one is, when I'm on a ladder, trying to be better, trying to think I'm worth more, I can never see clearly. But when I look at the cross, do you know what I see first? I see death. And it's actually really valuable to take your eyes off everything else and everyone else and look at the cross for a bit and remember you're going to die. And worms are going to eat your bones. And then all your great achievements will be for nothing. It's very comforting to think that of some politicians in the world right now, isn't it? Look at the cross and realize that the end of every human being is the same, and that's where you're headed. So that's why I take my eyes off the ladders and I look instead at the cross and I remember that I'm mortal. Death is going to make nothing of all my incredible somethings. Except the ones that Jesus gives, right? The other thing I have when I look at the cross is I see the victory of God. The victory of God who came down to suffer death for me and smash that curse so that I don't have to worry about my self-worth anymore, because my self-worth does not consist in me. It consists in that I'm worth dying for, that he died for me. And all the comparing in the world can never take that away. So as I finish, I just want to say this to you. Just take your eyes off yourself and everyone else for a moment. And when you put them on Jesus, know this, see this, hear this, that you are totally, deeply, eternally, and uniquely loved.